Your first eight guys maybe should be blue plate specials, but those back five guys, they should be more like tin hats, more guys that are grunt players, garbage players that dive for the ball.
You are listening to the Scrambled Eggs Podcast on CrackSidewalks.com.
Hi, everyone, and welcome into Scrambled Eggs, your unofficial Marquette basketball podcast here on CrackSidewalks.com. Joe McCann, Phil Bush here with you, and Phil, we weren't ready to record this podcast this soon. I feel like instead of our usual music, like we should use taps for this episode every year.
Oh, there's definitely some sort of dirge, public use dirge I should try and dig up and use for this podcast because
yeah,
I am sad. Like Cookie Monster's
yes.
Sad.
Mooey, very, very sad. So we will, in this show, we will talk about how it ended, as we promised we would way back a few weeks ago when we said, let's just enjoy the ride and we'll deal the end when it's here. And now the end is here, so we will talk about how the season ended. We will talk about the season as a whole and maybe talk a little bit about what is next. So, Phil, let's just dive into it. I'm glad we had the quick reaction pod over the weekend so we could celebrate getting that first tournament win. But I would say this before we really dive into everything. I want to say the overall theme I hope we hit on this podcast is great season, disappointing tournament.
Yeah, I agree. I am glad we got the good vibes from the quick reaction because I think it would be lost in this conversation. But, yeah, it's definitely a great season. And I think this is just a reinforcement. And quite frankly, I don't know that we're used to it because we hadn't been there in a decade. But, you know, the tournament ends in disappointment for 67 teams. And more than likely, most of those teams are disappointed in not that they didn't win it all, but that they didn't go far enough for their seed or for their talent or whatever. And boy, did that bug bite Marquette. We had expectations raised, and I think it's fair to say we didn't meet them from a tournament standpoint.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even the coaches and players would agree. When you get a two seed, I don't think you should be satisfied with just getting one win. Right? You know, it's you should have more than that. You're right that the season ends in disappointment for everyone eventually. But for the teams that meet their seed line or overperform, like, say, FDU is walking away from this tournament thrilled with what they did, right?
Mm-hmm.
They weren't
yep.
expected to do anything, and they got two wins. They got the Dayton win, and then they got an all-timer. But when you're a team like Marquette, who has got a two seed, which means you should get to the Elite Eight, or at least a Sweet 16, there's always a bad taste in your mouth when you go out early. So Marquette is in the same boat this season as Purdue and Arizona and Kansas as teams that really expected to be going another week and are not. I'm thrilled that we got the one win. So at least we got that no tournament win since 2013 thing off our back. But
right.
It still stings to lose, yes, to Joey Hauser and Michigan State. But just to not extend this another week and get to at least a Sweet 16, which is a notable accomplishment, especially because there are three other Big East teams in the Sweet 16. How great would it be to say, out of the five Big East teams in, four of us reached the Sweet 16? Marquette fell short in its regard. And if Marquette had not fallen short, zero Big Ten teams
right.
would have
been. Right. I was just going to comment on that Big Ten thing because, like, you know, the Big Ten is historically bad at the tournament over the last two decades. Right? Yes, you've had Wisconsin and that sort of thing.
Well, the thing is, for a while there, they had like a runner-up almost like every other year. But yes, they have right. not won a title. The Big Ten hasn't since 2000. Time
yeah.
is over, of course.
Yes, correct. And Michigan State. And I think the thing, like, we're going to get to the game itself, right? Like, let's take that aside for a moment. I think the biggest thing that I dislike about not getting the second win is, like, this window here, right? You win Sunday, and the game would have been on Thursday. And that Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of everyone talking about Marquette, opportunity to do, you know, brand blitzing from Marquette. I mean, heck, the NIL collective, you know, the Be the Difference collective that Travis Diener is running. I mean, there would have been an opportunity to really jump in and say, hey, you want to help the students and do that sort of stuff. So this window where we could have excitedly talked about the team, I think that's the thing that hurts the most is like we don't get to have that exciting conversation. And that's why that quick reaction pod, I think, was great, because we got to bask in the glow that, you know, for 24 hours. And I just miss that we would have had like 84 hours of unheralded giddiness, and that would have been awesome.
Yeah, I mean, Marquette would have been, I wouldn't say they would have been in the top story in Wisconsin, because like Aaron Rodgers tying his shoe would have been the top story in Wisconsin.
Today, Aaron Rodgers sneezed twice.
Yeah, lead story. But still, the second biggest story after whatever the Packers are doing would have been Marquette basketball, and that would have owned the state for a few days, and would have been great for the school, great for the program, and like you said, good time for fundraising and whatnot, whether it was the school or the NIL. But yeah, just and as I said before, the thing that another thing that stings to me is, you never know when they're going to be this good again. You hope they're going to be this good next year, but we don't know that. And that's why I like, when you are this good, when you get a two seed, this is the only two seed Marquette has ever gotten since they began seeding the tournament back in the, like, 79. So, you know, I mean, maybe Marquette could be a two seed next year. Maybe Marquette could be a one seed next year. But that's to be determined. We'll talk about next year towards the end of the show. But when you have this opportunity, when you are favored in your first two games, you want to capitalize and get, and just, you know, get a few more trophies in the trophy case, a few more banners hanging from the rafters, because the next opportunity is not guaranteed. And Marquette had a golden opportunity, and yeah, they ran into a Hall of Fame coach and a Michigan State team that was incredibly well prepared and ready for that moment. But I guess the moment was just too big for Marquette's guys. They just did not perform the way they would wanted to, and. And the thing is, it's not like they were blown out and they just had kind of a blah game. I mean, they were in it and had a chance to win it as late as like 3 minutes to go in the game. But all that matters is they didn't win and now they're out.
Right. Yeah, well, and I think that's the biggest thing, right, is not only were they favored in both games, but, you know, as we turn to the Michigan State game itself, like that was a game where – you know, they played probably their worst game of the season. You know, given what, and I don't want to take anything away from Michigan State or say they're a lousy team or any of that. I just mean that, like, the way Michigan State played, they didn't do anything extraordinary against Marquette. They didn't do anything unique or anything we haven't seen in the past, right? Marquette just flat out played poorly compared to their standard. And I think that's the, and I think fans can and should be disappointed that, you know, they missed that opportunity, and the way they missed that opportunity makes it sting even more. It's not like, oh, hey, Michigan State played a crazy good game, Marquette played its best game, and we had the ball bounce around, you know, weird, or, you know, had just terrible officiating, or you know, an apocalypse happened, whatever, right? Like, none of that happened. It was Michigan State played maybe an average game for them, Marquette played a well below average game for themselves, and Marquette was still in it, like you said, with 3 minutes to go, and then could not, you know, could not take hold of the game, and as a result, lost, missed the opportunity, and just it all adds up to, and I think for some, it's probably, I don't think that this is definitely not the take I have, but I do know some view it as like a disappointment that wipes out the rest of the season experience, which I think is kind of crazy. But I get why people are disappointed in the result. I am as well, because again, Marquette should have won.
Yeah. I mean, the players are disappointed in the result, right? I would hope they are.
Right.
I mean, the coaches are, I'm sure they are. No, I don't think any single player or coach over there at the Al McGuire Center went into this thing thinking, well, we're just happy to be here. And if we get one, that's enough. I don't think any of them thought that. They just didn't play their best game. 16 turnovers as a team. One of their biggest strength of the entire year, two-point baskets. They had a rough day there. They shot 36% from the floor on two-point baskets. And some of that is credit to Michigan State. I think they really packed it in the paint when Marquette was trying to get layups, and Marquette missed a lot of layups. Marquette actually shot the ball very well from three. They shot 11 of 27. That's 40.7% from three. That's well above Marquette's season average. maybe in hindsight they should have kicked it out more and shot more threes, and maybe it would have gone another way. But and Michigan State shot very poorly from three, which is the thing that upsets me the most. Is we probably hit a goal of getting Michigan State to shoot poorly from three. They were only 2 of 16, and got to capitalize on that. And again, Marquette was within 1 point when Omax missed a free throw with 3.5 to go. So with like 3 minutes or so to go, they were still within a point. But then Marquette just wasn't able to get one more bucket after that, and Michigan State scored on most every possession in the final couple minutes. And that's your ball game. But yeah, it's okay to hate that game. It doesn't make you less of a fan, because the team hates that game. They're not proud of the way they played in that game. But to your point, Phil, it doesn't ruin the season. I mean, it ends the season, but it doesn't make me flip from saying this was a great season to a terrible season. It was an awesome season. One of the best regular seasons in Marquette basketball history. If you break it down like in parts, non-conference was okay. Big East season was the best in school history. Big East tournament was the best in school history. And a disappointing NCAA tournament. Some of the parts, it's a good year. A lot of great memories from this team. There's no denying that it's disappointing that it ended that way.
Yeah, and I think the big thing is that, like you said, in total, the season overall was good to great. You know, certainly a missed opportunity. And I think that's the other piece of it is we had gotten, dare I say, accustomed to Marquette taking the opportunities, right? They had opportunities in the Big E tournament, took them, they won that thing. They had opportunities in the Big East regular season, even when they weren't playing well, they were still winning. I think one of the things that really struck me, and it's maybe not the right way to talk about it, but starting with Big East play, Marquette lost one game in each month. So January they lost one game, February they lost one game, and then March. Or am I remembering? Or no, December, January, February. They lost one game.
Pretty good. One loss a month. Hard to complain about that. Well, I guess they lost two in December. Well, starting in Big East play, you're right. So starting in Big East play, when Big East play began, yeah, it was one loss a month.
Right.
They lost two in December total because they lost to Wisconsin on December 3rd.
Right.
But to your point, yeah, the losses were very spaced out. They lost to Providence on December 20th. They lost to Xavier on January 15th. They lost to Connecticut on Tuesday on February 7th. And then the season ended on March 19th against Michigan State. So
right.
They were damn good.
Right.
They were amazing. It's just lost the last one.
Yeah, and I think the thing is you know, as we get into the game details itself, I think the thing that was crazy to me is you could have predicted a Marquette loss, right? Like I wouldn't have poo-pooed you. I wasn't thinking a loss, but like if someone was like, "Hey, logically, this is what I'm thinking we're going to lose," I wouldn't have thought you crazy. But the way they lost was like so unpredictable and like so out of character over anything we've seen. I mean, just the list off the top of my head, and you can add to it, is Tyler Kolek played his worst game this season by far. Maybe, depending on how you want to classify it, it may have been his worst game in a Marquette uniform. You know, Chase Ross played probably his worst game of the whole season. You know, like you said, the team that was for the better part of the entire season was the best team in the country in 2-point percentage, had their worst 2-point percentage game. And again, it's not like Michigan State was doing anything special or unique. I mean, they were certainly trying to do stuff, but Marquette A, just missed shots, and B, didn't necessarily play its game or committed too many turnovers. I mean, there was one point in the second half when Marquette actually had a lead where they could have extended that lead to double digits, but turned it over like five straight times, you know? And so like there was just a weird accumulation of weird ways Marquette played that they had never done all season that all added up to say, not your day.
Yeah, a lot of things. And yeah, to your point, if somebody had predicted Michigan State going in, again, I would agree it wouldn't have been crazy because basically Izzo's history, Shaka's recent history, if we're being honest, On top of that, the Vegas line was only Marquette by like two and a half. So that tells you Vegas was begging you to take Marquette. And was when Vegas is telling you to take is begging you to take a team, got to be wary there. But I think you hit on a lot of the key points. There is a lot of the major reasons why the game went the way it did. And look, we try to be kind here when we're breaking down college athletes, but I think we would be kind if we just did not ignored the game Tyler Kolek had. He had a rough one, to put it lightly. His offensive rating in that game was 64, which is, to your point, Phil, that is his worst game this season. And I think he had worse games last year when he wasn't shooting well. So there are definitely, gosh, he had a game against St. Bonaventure last year when his offensive rating was 6. My goodness. But yeah, it was his, like, he has only had two games this year on KenPom where his offensive rating was less than 80. Most of his games were well above 100. Just a quick sample size, beginning, starting after the Connecticut loss. These are his offensive ratings since the loss at Connecticut: 163, 97, 106, 144, 153, 136, 97, 124, 110. Tournament starts 73, 64.
Yeah.
And look, he hurt his thumb in the first 3 minutes of that Vermont game. Maybe it was still bothering him. Maybe that's a reason he played the way he did. It certainly is plausible that that is, that may be why he was off a little bit. Maybe it was the pain, or maybe it was just in his head. But whatever it was, there's no denying Tyler didn't have his best games. And I hate that for him, because it's pretty well detailed in, I think it was a Brian Hamilton article on The Athletic, like how he kind of really took it hard last year, what people were saying about him. Online, because the comments got to him one way or the other, whether he was reading them or people were telling him what people were saying. He took it really hard, and he and Shaka had a good talk, and he got in the lab and fixed his shot, and you saw the results this year. He was an All-American. But for whatever reason, when you're All-American, has games like that, it's tough to overcome. It really is. And I made this analogy, I'll leave the Packers out of it. Me as a Chiefs fan, it's like watching Patrick Mahomes throw 3 interceptions in a game that you lose. He's still your guy, and you wouldn't want anyone else out there, but it's hard to ignore that performance contributed to a loss, right?
Right.
It's not like it's like you dislike the guy or want to trash him or want somebody else out there. No, there was no other point guard in the country I would rather have leading Marquette this year or next than Tyler Kolek. But he had a bad game, and when your leader is off like that, it's tough to overcome.
Yeah, well, and you can make the argument, right? Like, and maybe the Big East tournament was a little bit of fool's gold simply because, because it was against Big East opponents. It wasn't. It's on the national stage, but not quite, right? Like, and so maybe we kind of all fooled ourselves to say, look, these guys stepped up in a really huge way and won the Big East tournament. But there may just be something about the NCAA tournament. I mean, I think for some reason I'm double checking my math, but other than Shaka, there's not anyone on that roster or on that staff that has, well, I guess Nevada Smith would, but there's no one on that staff. Otherwise, there's no one on that staff that has NCAA tournament experience, right? And maybe there was just, because it is such an outlier. Like, that game against Michigan State is the literal definition of outlier in all sorts of ways. Maybe it was just the stage and the experience and the fact that these guys are all, you know, what you could classify them as sophomores or juniors or whatever, but they're all young guys with no tournament experience. Maybe that finally caught up to him.
Maybe a little bit, yeah. It's always easy to just say young team when a team loses, but again, I think if you run that game back, Marquette probably wins it more often than they lose it. Like, I want to say like 8 out of 10 or anything, but they probably win 6 out of 10. Maybe 7, I don't know. But Marquette is better than Michigan State, and they should have won that game. But again, it's the beauty of the tournament, for better or for worse. One bad game and you are done. Purdue could probably play Fairleigh Dickinson 100 times and win 99. Unfortunately, this year was that one, right?
Right.
That's just the way it goes. And Yeah, it's tough to stomach, and I know there's some feelings of regret, and I'm sure several players on the Marquette team have replayed certain moments in their head of, man, what if I hit that shot, or what if I grabbed that rebound, or what if I didn't make that turnover at that moment? Would this thing have gone a different way? And maybe it would have, because, again, it was a one-point game with 3.5 to play. Just a missed shot there, a missed defensive assignment there. Get an extra rebound there, and it might go a different way, but it didn't. Michigan State remained poised down the stretch, and Marquette just didn't, and that ended their season. And yeah, I certainly agree it's an outlier, but unfortunately it counts.
Right.
We can't do it over again. So, and that team as it is will not be a get together again. There will be some changes, some small, maybe small, maybe big, but this exact 2022-23 Marquette basketball team will not play together again.
Right.
That's the way it ends. But they do get there's so much to hang their heads high about. They have a double Big East championship. They're going to hang banners, and that will hang in the Fiserv Forum forever. They can always look up at that, or when they come back and visit the Al McGuire Center, that Big East championship trophy, those two trophies, will be there. They'll always have rings. I assume they're getting championship rings that they will always have. And so they have left their mark. There's not many conference champions in Marquette basketball history, so there's so much to be proud of. It's just a tournament run is kind of what ultimately, historically speaking, is going to separate this team from some of the greatest of the great, right? 03, 77, 74, 70. They needed more if they were going to be in that upper tier of all-time great teams. But they're on the short list. I mean, again, maybe that's an off-season project, greatest Marquette teams ever. Maybe they could still crack the top 10. I don't know. I really have to dig into it. But I think losing to Michigan State in the second round probably prevents them from maybe being discussed as a top five all-time Marquette team.
Right. Yeah, I do think that is an off-season project that we got to look at that. I don't know. I struggle with that whole eliminate them from contention in a top five, because it a single elimination tournament deciding whether, you know, like a great season was truly great feels a level overweighted, but also I get it, right?
Like, yeah, you know, that's how we decide our champion, for better or for worse. That is how we decide our champion, is this gigantic tournament where you need to win six times to be a champion.
Right. I mean, so I'm just looking at the 2002 team, right? That lost in the opening round. They were a five seed, and lost to the opening round in Tulsa. You know, and when you compare and look at them compared to the 03 team, like, I mean, the 03 team lost in the opening round of the conference tournament. They had roughly the same number of losses in conference play. You know, should we really, you know, do, like, we remember the 03 team more than the 02 team, and it's only because of the Final Four run versus the first round loss, right? Like, if you took out the March Madness tournament, like, those teams are even, right? Or approximately even?
I mean, 03 had a Big East championship. There's that on top of it. But, yeah, I mean, it's close.
You know, so they're at least in, like, hey, let's discuss this. But, like, nobody remembers the 02 team because, to your point, they didn't win the conference title at the end. And, you know, they didn't win a tournament game, and the other team went to the Final Four. But, you know, so it's all fascinating, and, you know, it sucks, yeah, for the team.
It's weird to tell, like, you know, the again, fair or unfair. I feel like I've said that a lot regarding this team, but a lot of judgment does fall on them based on the tournament. But this is an interesting question. I'm not sure what the exact correct answer is, but would you rather be Creighton right now, all things considered? A team that got a six seed, was 14-6 in the Big East, did not win a regular season or postseason Big East tournament, but they are in the Sweet 16, and if they beat Princeton, they'll be in the Elite Eight. Like, who would you say had a better season, Creighton or Marquette?
Right. It's a perfect thing. I think for consistency, like, I would absolutely trade the Big East tournament for a Sweet 16. Like, it's not close. What I struggle
about,
what I struggle with is a dominant conference performance that won us an outright Big East title. Like, that I have trouble giving up for a Sweet 16 bid.
Yeah. I think so. Because, I mean, you get trophies for getting regular season Big East titles, and that's it's more prestigious because it's harder to do than a Big East tournament title. And, you know, I think it's more memorable winning a regular season Big East title, but some people might argue with you because, like, granted, maybe Elite Eight is, obviously Elite Eight is more prestigious, but I think more people remember the 2013 team for getting to the Elite Eight than they do for winning a share of the Big East title.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think it's about the intensity, right? Like, the NCAA tournament is, like, such a packed intensity. It's less than a month. Like, you have all these feelings, and it's just, it's magical versus, you know, something like a Big East regular season title. Slog has such a negative connotation to it, but it's a slog. Like, it is 3 months of playing games and having to win those games, and it's, you may remember moments in that game, right? Like, in that season, right? Like, we may remember, you know, we're going to remember Oso Iguodaro being clutch with free throws at the end of the home game against UConn, or, you know, or whatever. There are moments within that season, but it's not the same level of compactness and intensity. So it just doesn't, you know, maybe I'm getting into the science of the brain, but it just doesn't stick as much as that magical March Madness run does. And so, you know, maybe logically the Big East regular season title makes more sense, but, like, emotionally and just impactfully, especially for, like, the non people who do a podcast for free fans, you know what I mean? Those, the common folk that are like, oh, I just like watching the tournament, or, oh, I live in Wisconsin and Marquette's a team in Wisconsin. How are they doing in the tournament? Oh, they lost ugly? Oh, okay. You know what I mean? The casual fan does right. not care about the regular season. The tournament is the only thing that shows up for them.
Yeah. Again, you hit a big shot in February against Seton Hall. It's usually forgotten, but if you hit a big shot in the NCAA tournament to save your season, that lives forever. People never forget that stuff.
Right. Well, we joked about it. If Chase Ross takes his dunk against Seton Hall on the road that just had us absolutely jumping out of our seats, and he does that dunk against Joey Hauser in the tournament, and we end up winning that game, like, those are remembered in two wildly different ways. Same play.
I mean, they would print out posters different. And sell them nationwide if he did that in the tournament.
Right, right. I mean, it makes the one shining moment, right? Like, that is...
Oh, yeah.
You know, that is memorable for ages. Chase would, if that happened, Chase would dine on that with Marquette fans for years. Within a legal framework, there is nothing else Chase could do that would top that other than winning a national title, right?
Exactly. So, and who knows, maybe this team will be to next year what '02 was to the '03 team. Because there's an expression in sports, you need to get your heart broken before you can become a champion. I've heard that said before, and these guys got their hearts broken this year. I mean, maybe they did last year a little bit, but they really were devastated this year by losing this game. And again, technically they can all come back. Will they all? We'll see what the offseason brings. But there's a good chance that this team is preseason top 10, top 5. Gary Parrish was talking the other day that he's considering for number one.
Like, right.
I mean, we'll see we'll see. There's a lot of movement that's going to happen both Marquette and around the country as far as the transfer portal is always wild. And I don't even try to keep up with the portal too much. I just kind of wait until like May when the dust settles and say, oh, well, that guy's there now. And, or, well, they lost that guy. But this could be the beginning of something really awesome. It's just, it stings that it's over now, but big picture, Phil, I do thank this team, the players, the coaches, for the incredible run. It was an incredibly memorable season. Again, one of the best in Marquette history, certainly the best in 20 years. It's tough to, like, what do I remember more, this or the 13 team? I think I will hold this team in a little higher regard than 2013, just because they were a double Big East champion, they didn't share it with anybody, and they so far exceeded expectations. Where that 13 team, I don't know if they were, they definitely weren't picked to win it, but they were probably picked to be at least middle to upper tier after back-to-back Sweet 16s. And then they went out and ended up sharing a title with Louisville and Georgetown that year. But this team was picked near the bottom of the league, expected to be one of the worst teams in the Big East, maybe in all of Power 5, Power 6. And then they win the league outright, comfortably, by two games, win the Big East tournament. I think I will hold this team in a little higher regard. I will remember this team a little bit more fondly than basically any team in my lifetime as a fan except the 03 team.
Yeah, I think so. I think this, I just, you know, and again, you can look at the numbers, you can look at the performance, the outcome. It was just a fun team to watch, right? And I kind of discount the expectations side, right? Because I was relatively, not high enough, but, you know, I was relatively high on what this team was capable of. But I think the big thing that I'm really going to remember is, like, how much more beautiful the basketball was than even I anticipated, right? Like, and the results, certainly, the two championships. Yeah, they got the two out of three championships, but for, you know, obvious reasons, the one championship they didn't get is far exceeds the other two, right? But yeah, I'm just going to remember the good vibes. And it was, and I think it was a cleansing, was the other thing I'm going to recall about this season, right? Like, we'd been through some tough times over the last decade. And even there was some dissension, you know, last year and some of the things, you know, with the February fade and stuff like that. And I feel like we got to see where it goes, but I feel like, you know, Shaka and this team kind of restored a little bit of Marquette swagger and kind of restored the fans to, like, hey, you know, we can be good. We can be somewhat confident. We don't, you know, we don't have to dwell in this, like, Eeyore, everything's going to be bad, you know, state of being, and I'll always enjoy that.
I think that's a good point. I think maybe that's even a better way to remember this team is the 2023 team brought Marquette fans back. Like, yeah, last year was good, but, I mean, they were still kind of a middle-of-the-pack Big East team, and they went out in the first round, and so it was like, well, I mean, it was a nice first year. Let's see what the future brings. But I think this team truly brought the buzz back to Fiserv Forum, buzz back to Milwaukee. Maybe I shouldn't say buzz, but it brought the excitement back to Milwaukee, and, you know, fans were packing the arena again. I remember Mark Strotman had a good column on Paint Touches a month or so back where he said why Shaka brought me back. It's a good article about why this group is more exciting than what we've been used to the previous decade. And this team did bring Marquette fans back, and I think you made a good point. I think the groundwork has been laid, because I think Shaka has said in the past that the first year or two is about building culture and establishing things. Well, they've done that. So the interesting thing we'll see, you know, can they keep this going? And that, like, they've got a great offensive and defensive philosophy, I think. We'll see how that changes as they bring in different types of players over the years as Shaka continues to evolve this program in the image that he wants. But, I mean, they've built a solid foundation, and this foundation just happened to include a double Big East championship. And the excitement is back at Fiserv Forum, where, and of course, you know, was the Bradley Center for a long time, but in that part of downtown Milwaukee. So I think that is probably the legacy of this team, is just rejuvenating the passion for Marquette basketball. Last year brought it back a little bit, but this year it's like, wow, our team is legitimately good, and they are one of the best teams in the country. Will it always be that way? No, of course. I mean, things come and go when it comes to being a truly great team, but I think they have laid the groundwork that should allow Marquette to be an upper-tier team in the Big East for hopefully years to come.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. I think that's the big thing, is that this is – that you can now see, regardless how tournament results work out or whatever, you can see with your own eyes that this is a rebuild that is successful. I mean, there very well could be step backs or setbacks or issues along the way, but I think this is you know, in year two, you can now kind of conclude, hey, we are on the right path. You know, we have a coach that can build and sustain success. He's done it in the past. He's done it in 2 years here at Marquette. You know, we are putting the name back out into the lexicon, right? Like the you know, I will say the last 2 or 3 years of Wojo, the only time Marquette was really came up was in the context of, hey, is their coach on the hot seat, right? Or, you know, there was an occasional, oh, can you believe Marquette upset, you know, team Y because it wasn't expected, right? And now, you know, like you mentioned earlier, I mean, you've got the Ion, you know, Ion Basketball podcast talking about, hey, does Marquette, you know, end up as a top five, top one team next season if nothing changes? I mean, that, like, you know, that is territory we've never been in. Like, I'm trying to remember back to 03. Was 03, like, highly regarded going into 03?
Not that high. They may have been a preseason top 25 team, but they were nowhere near top 10. To my memory, I don't remember going in. Like, they were, the best that I can remember from that is they were definitely picked to win Conference USA because Cincinnati lost a lot of guys and they were expected to be down. So I think they were the popular pick to win the league that year again, but that was Conference USA. That wasn't the Big East. But maybe a preseason top 25 team, but definitely not top 10 or top 5. But yeah, I mean, Marquette probably hasn't been picked that high in the preseason since McGuire was the coach, honestly, or maybe the year after he left. But they were definitely not picked that high, 80s or 90s, or any time when Crean or Buzz were the coach. I mean, maybe the 09 team was maybe projected a top 10-ish, somewhere around there. But as far as truly being the hunted, I mean, that would be a different thing for this team, because it'd be, like, you know, from being predicted to pick near the bottom of the Big East in each of their first 2 years together, to go from, well, can this team win a national championship? Like, right. That is way up there. Like, that is a big shift, and you can't play the underdog and nobody believed in this thing anymore.
Well, and that's going to be, I mean, truthfully, is going to be one of the challenges next season is going to be that, is going to be the whole idea of, you know, sustained success or playing as the hunted, right? Like, this season, we were always the hunters. Even in the Big East tournament, we were a bit of the hunters, right? UConn was favored. I think we were favored against Xavier, but not by much, right? Like, so
yeah, the odds when the tournament began, UConn was the betting favorite, and maybe Creighton might have been a notch above us. But yeah, we were not picked to win even the Big East tournament this year.
Right, and so, like, you know, so next season, one of the focuses is going to be, how do you, you know, if we are picked to the top 10, you know, how does the team respond from that level of expectation and sustainment? And, you know, you're going to functionally get everyone's best shot. And, oh, by the way, you know, the Big East arguably has gotten better from a coaching perspective. Yep. You know, we can talk about that, but, like, the it's not going to be, you know, there was a clear bottom half of the Big East this season. I think it's maybe now the bottom third going into next season. So that's going to present challenges to Marquette that they did not have this season.
Yeah, there may not be as, not that I expect huge jumps necessarily from some of these teams making coaching changes, but yeah, I'm sure as you all know by now, Ed Cooley has leapt from Providence to Georgetown. So, well, I don't expect Georgetown to take a huge leap in year one. I expect Georgetown to be not a joke under Ed Cooley. And then Patino is now at St. John's. Our old friend Rick, who knows, that may heat up a St. John's Marquette rivalry a little bit. But because if you remember those Louisville Marquette
games
when Patino was the coach, boy, that was a scorching hot rivalry. But it sounds like he's already talking Soriano into coming back and using his COVID year. And so if he brings back everybody else from St. John's and maybe even adds a guy, St. John's might be pretty good, actually. And then, now, again, there are 11 teams in the league, so somebody's got to finish 9th, 10th, and 11th. I would think maybe Providence takes a step back, even though it looks like they're going to hire Kim English, who may be a promising young coach, but again, we got a whole offseason full of player movement before I judge who's going to be good and who's going to be bad. But, yeah, I mean, to your point, Phil, there's probably not going to be as many easy wins next year in the Big East. Getting 17 wins in the Big East, no matter how good Marquette is, maybe that's probably going to be a pretty high number.
Yeah, well, and I think, you know, you mentioned a couple of things that I think I'm excited for the Big East next year because rivalries are back, right? And I think there were some memes on Twitter and whatnot, but, you know, I mean, Princeton, good Lord, Providence and Georgetown, they may have to play that game in an empty arena. The vitriol is going to be off the chain. St. John's, again, it depends if Patino can reload in the portal. But I'm with you that St. John's is going to be better next year. Georgetown is going to be better. Providence will maybe be worse, but, you know, who knows? We'll see. I will always hate Kim English for those free throws when he played for Missouri as a freshman. But I'm not going to introduce those bad vibes. But, again, there's rivalries back. You know, again, we're always going to hate Patino. Right, and so there's going to be a naturally evolving rivalry with St. John's. You know, Georgetown is just going to be hated by everyone because they, because Cooley shanked Providence on his way out of town. I don't care; it was the right call for Cooley or whatever. Like, he made his choice, but there's no doubt. You can't play the nice guy at this point. He just needs to own the villain move because,
and I totally understand the vitriol from Providence fans. If Marquette had a coach leave and go to a conference rival, even if it is quote unquote a better job, and that guy is an alum of the school, my gosh, how could you not be bitter about that?
And had been there for over a decade. I mean, they everything was centered around Cooley, and I do want to bring this up, not in the context that I think Cooley did anything wrong, because this is kind of just sort of how the business works. But, some of the stuff the PC fans have been coming out with, look, his house was on the market before the Big East tournament even finished. And, you know, so he was clearly on his way out the door. And it's like, yeah, man, these guys all have agents who talk to these opportunities. You know, their agents wouldn't be doing their job. And, you could make an argument, was Cooley distracted? Maybe. I don't know. But he may have been distracted because there was other stuff going on, right? Whatever, this is how the business operates. But that is just, I'm gonna love watching that. And you know, if I'm Fox, I don't care about the quality. I put Georgetown Providence on Big Fox.
First time it happens. I would lead off with that, actually. I would make that the first game of the Big East season.
Oh yeah, at Providence.
Georgetown at Providence.
Oh my God. How high would the insurance levels have to go on the Dunkin' Center or whatever it's called?
You better double your security that day. I mean, we've seen Providence fans walk on the court before.
There'd have to be zero concessions, right? They chuck nachos if they could, right? Yeah. They could not sell a single thing, and everyone has to walk in t-shirts and shorts. Oh God. Well, anyway, it's not a Providence podcast, but it's going to be fun next year. It's going to be fun.
It will be fun. And hopefully Marquette is going to be the preseason favorite. And we could talk a little bit about next year's team now. I think we've broken down the season and the game, I think we've made our point, right? Great season, disappointing end. Love the team overall, yes?
Yes, agreed.
Okay, so looking ahead to next year, this is what we know. No player who contributed significant minutes this year is out of eligibility. Technically, everybody who played this year can come back. We also know Marquette is one over the scholarship limit for next year. So if you include all the scholarship players on this year's team and the three freshmen, Trey Norman, Zaid Lowry, and Al Amadou coming in next year, Marquette would be one over. So someone is leaving. The question is, will that be a player opting for pro options? Will that be a player transferring on his own? Or will that be a situation where the coaching staff has to look at it and say, crap, we need to tell somebody they need to find somewhere else to be? It'll be one of those three. It could be more than one of those three. But without knowing what's going to happen, Phil, I mean, you would think, barring some Hauser-Geddon-like situation, and that has got all of us scarred for years. I've said before, I never assume anybody is coming back. I kind of want, like, some kind of statement from everyone.
Right.
yep, I'm coming back. You know, there's what's his name? Tipton Edits. Maybe he's busy, like, putting those things together. Those things are always, like, annoying to me. Like, the guy, like, guys will go on Twitter, and they'll put, like, a picture of themselves and, like, 10 paragraphs thanking everybody they've ever known. And then you, like, screw that, like, you just, like, just get me to the point. Just tell me the thing you're trying to say. Are you transferring? Are you going pro? Or are you returning? I just need to know. I need to know the headline. I appreciate the guys who, like, put the thing you need to know in, like, big, bold font, and then I can skip everything else. It's like, I don't need to read all this.
I don't care. This isn't for me. Just give me the cliff notes.
Yeah, I don't need you describing the delivery. Just show me the baby. Just tell me what I need to know. So we'll see what type of announcements we get from the players. But yes, as of now, I don't assume anyone is coming back 100%. But there's looking at it player by player, there's every logical reason that just about every guy on this team could or should be back. And if that's the case, Phil, even if you lose, say, one rotation guy or one bench guy, this still should be the best team in the Big East next year.
Yeah, well, and I mean, when you look at the talent coming in and what the team did, and now what'll be interesting is, you know, it was almost an exponential growth curve for everyone on this roster, you know, year one to year two. I think, and you may have even mentioned this a little bit, but, like, everyone on this roster played better than – like from an analytics standpoint, their offensive rating, defensive rating was better than year one, right? Like, so, like, just an astronomical growth. So if you can continue that with whoever comes back, and yes, people could leave for whatever reason, and, you know, and there is increased risk. So not only do you have the league, but now you got the portal and the NIL associated with the portal. And all of that stuff, which is why things like the Be the Difference Collective is critical for Marquette, because Marquette has to compete in that market. They can't just sit on their high moral horse and go, "Eh, it'll work itself out," right? Like, they've got to put dollars behind it. I don't mean Marquette the institution. I mean Marquette the, like, fan base and the, like, you know, charity organizations and the advertising organizations, right? Those folks have to jump in on the NIL game if Marquette is going to, you know, maintain its roster.
Yeah, exactly. And for those of you who may not like NIL stuff, I got to tell you, it's not going away. And you better embrace that that's what this era is going to involve. Like, every coach, when they go out recruiting, yeah, they can still talk about our university and our institution and all these programs and all these things we can offer you. So many of these kids, the first thing they want to know is, hey, well, how much money can I make at your school? Right.
Right.
You mentioned Be the Difference. We may actually be involved with them a little bit over the summer. We may bring some of their guys on the podcast, maybe to share some stories, but also, you know, give you guys some details as far as what Be the Difference NIL is all about and what it hopes to be and how it hopes to help these players. But you bring up a good point, Phil, because don't be the kind of, like, arrogant fan that thinks, well, these players should just be honored to wear the jersey and they shouldn't care about the money. Not the way it's going to go, guys. It's
right.
like the players need to be fairly compensated or they will look, and I'm not speaking just on Marquette players, I'm speaking of college basketball in general here. If a player does not feel like he's appreciated or feels like he can get a lot, like significantly more money somewhere else, that portal is right there, and they can play right away the next year. So NIL is going to be important. If whether you like it or not, you just need to accept it. NIL is going to be huge as far as maintaining. If you want to be a serious college basketball program, you need to have some type of NIL collective that can make sure the players are compensated fairly, like close to what their market value would be if they were in the portal. So that's going to be something to follow, not just this year, but for years to come. So, and yeah, the weird thing is, Phil, like, I don't know what fair market value is, because when it comes to, like, NBA players, you could just go to Google and see what Giannis or Chris Middleton or Drew Holiday make and say, okay, well, that's what a player of that caliber is worth. I really don't know exactly what a Tyler Kolek or Oso Iguodaro or, you know, Cam Jones is worth. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
you could tell me they made $20,000 this year, or you could tell me they made $300,000 this year. And either way, it's like, oh, that's cool.
Right, right. Well, and again, like, but that's all part of the landscape. And to your point, it's not going away, and it's a reality. And Shaka's going to have to work within that construct. And there could be, you know, again, there could be players that leave this team, and then they got to backfill and build the culture. But I think that's also why the culture is so important to Shaka, is it's a retention tool, right? Like, you know, if, you know, think of it as all of our workplaces, right? Like, if you have a place that you love and, you know, your work-life balance is great and you got all these things, but there's this other place that has, like, you can make $10,000 more there, okay, but maybe the culture isn't as good. Like, are you going to make that jump, right? So I think some of that is, you know, Shaka wants to build culture for the sake of just, you know, doing well, and that's what he wants. But it is also a bit of a retention tool to try and keep these guys connected, right? And certainly they have been all season. I mean, you know, it's been a running joke with the wife character and I, anytime we see them on the local news being interviewed or whatever, like, they're almost like robotic or cultish in their responses. Like, you always hear one of the players say something about pouring into each other or connected. You know, they have that culture doc, and boy, is it ingrained in every one of them. So, I mean, that bodes well. I don't say that as a dig. But you know, that's going to matter for how this team, you know, responds and comes back and does that sort of thing.
You know, I agree. Like, Shaka and the staff have done an incredible job this year of coming up with themes or goals or slogans or whatever it have to keep the guys interested week to week, right? Whether it's a new theme for each game or a slogan that keeps coming back, that they, like, no finish line was a really good one this year. Oso actually came up with that one, I believe. And like, that was a theme that kept going. And I do think the things about relationships, I think that's all is genuine. I don't think that's just lip service. I really think this team is as connected as they appear to be. But it's also tough to maintain that year to year with these players. And again, this isn't just a statement on Marquette players, it's college basketball players in general. Yeah, you can pitch things like family and togetherness, but at some point it can get stale. It didn't get stale for this team this year, but at some point you may have like a theme or a connection like that does get stale, and like, some guys may look like, is there something else out there for me, right? And so that's like the first step as you build to next year, is Shaka has essentially got to re-recruit his own team, see who is still all in and all on board for next year. Hopefully it's all of them, but it might not be, but that's okay. Teams lose players all the time, and it's just about how they step up. I mean, this time a year ago, you would have thought Marquette would have taken a big step back if you lose Justin Lewis and Daryl Morcell and Greg Elliott, but it didn't. It took a big, big leap forward. So, but again, if you're bringing back all these guys who were so good for you this year, and they're all even a little bit better, they don't necessarily all need to make the huge leaps they made this year, because a lot of guys did make big leaps this year. But even if everybody who returns takes a small leap forward, whether it's shooting percentage is a little better, they become a little better passer, they're a little better free throw shooter, they're a little bit better defender, maybe they're a little more in shape, so they move just a little bit better. And then there's going to be three new guys on the roster next year who all want to play. They probably, I don't know if they all will, but they're all going to be pushing for time. And it's going to be tough to keep some of these young guys off the floor next year, because some of them look really good. But yeah, just if even if you do lose one player that you were expecting to come back, I still think they can be just as good, if not better, next year if everyone else who returns can continue to work the way they have. But that's a lot easier said than done.
Yeah, I agree. And that's what's going to be interesting next year, because the landscape's going to change around them as well, right? Georgetown, Providence, St. John's. I mean, all the teams in the Big East, all the teams in the country are going to go portaling and do that sort of thing. But some of those teams in the Big East, it's going to be absolutely critical. You know, and some would argue that Cooley is already portaling ahead of time for Georgetown.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Yeah, he definitely called Eddie Lampkin a little early, but we are getting back to Providence.
Oh, there was 100% a text yesterday going, my dude, can you take this down?
Yes, there 100% was.
You know, but you know, so again, I think the thing that's exciting is if Shaka can hold the team together and bring in the recruits as planned. And again, that's not to say that that is either impossible or like a big deal, right? Like it could be anything. We're not inside the team. We don't know. But assuming you can bring most, if not all, the team back, develop a little further, bring in the new talent, like now all of a sudden you're stacking success. Yes, we go to become the hunted next year, but you've got the capability to be the hunted, and you hope this experience in the NCAA tournament, you know, take Tyler as an example. You know, we saw that Hamilton article that you referenced earlier where Tyler was like, I had this bad experience in year one. Look what I was able to turn it into in year two. If he can do that with the tournament experience, right? Because he clearly had, you know, one bad game and one really bad game in the tournament when it mattered the most. If he can recover from that and build on that, like this team now they've been bloodied. You take them into a tournament next year, let's say they're a top three seed. I think they're going to be in a much better position to be successful next year than they were this year.
Yeah, you would hope so, but again, there's so much time between now and then. That's got to be like the most frustrating thing for all the guys on this team, is they can't get redemption until next March, right? So
right.
Like, they have to go through the whole process all over again, the off season, the non-conference, the Big East regular season, the Big East. They have to go through all of it again. So like, that's what I was kind of saying earlier this year about you can't win a tournament game in February for everyone who's saying, well, you got to win a tournament game. It's like, well, we will once we get to the tournament. Like, they can't get to the Sweet 16 in August. They can't get to the Sweet 16 in November. They have to go through the whole process again. And that can be draining on a team mentally. And I think that's the challenge Shaka and his staff have now, is to not only, you know, keep up these themes that they've had, but come up with new themes, new games, new props or whatever they are.
How do you keep the team excited?
Yeah, you got to keep it fresh and keep these guys excited. And I know they're going to be driven to get back there. But unfortunately, we have to wait literally a year to see if they can do it again.
Yeah, well, you are the king of analogies, but I'll bring one, right? It's no different than, you know, you play a video game, especially like, you know, a linear one where you've like got to meet, you know, you got to beat the minor boss, and then you got to go in and beat the major boss. And like, you keep getting to the same, you know, you have to go and beat each thing. You can't save at a checkpoint along the way.
Yes.
That's what this is going to feel like to them, is like, okay, I fought this boss before. Okay, I'll beat that boss. Now I got to go beat the next boss. Okay, oh, now I'm facing the boss that I didn't beat. Now I got to beat that one. But it's like, am I worn out from like being bored by having to beat the previous bosses that I'd already beaten?
Yes, like yeah, they have to go through all the bye games. Hey, but the thing is, if there's any kind of like wishy-washy about coming back, you do get to go to Maui next year.
There is
a trip to Hawaii. There is a trip to Hawaii in it next year, and boy, that next year's Maui field is loaded. By the way,
that's gonna tell us some things early, right? Like,
yeah, it's I don't have it at the top of my head, but it's like Kansas, it's UCLA, Gonzaga, Tennessee. I think that's the field. It is a loaded field next year, and I think it is a year for Chaminade. Okay, so yeah, next year's field: Chaminade, Gonzaga, Kansas, Marquette, Purdue, Syracuse, Tennessee, UCLA. Goodness gracious. So obviously Chaminade, the little host school, but Gonzaga, who was in the Sweet 16, Kansas, who was a one seed this year, Purdue, who was a one seed this year, Syracuse, blah, they got a new coach, Tennessee's in the Sweet 16, and UCLA's in the Sweet 16. They're a two seed. Marquette.
Yeah, and I mean, and Purdue, I mean, Edie can come back, right?
Yeah, Purdue could technically bring, I would think 7-4 guy might be ready to try his shot at the pros, but Purdue could bring back everybody as well. So yeah, that'll be fun.
Yeah.
All right, I think we've broken down a lot when it comes to this team and next year. For those of you who are new to the pod, you know that this will be news to you, but our OG fans would know this. So the schedule shifts for us in the off season. Obviously, we don't have a lot of Marquette stuff to talk about week to week.
We hope that.
We hope we don't have a lot of Marquette stuff to talk about week to week in the off. We hope this is a very boring off season with very little news as far as whether it's player movement, coach movement, conference movement. These are all things. But whenever there is news, a significant amount of news, we will check in maybe, I'd say we maybe average maybe once a month, once every 6 weeks in the off season or so, maybe just to check in if there's any news. There won't be I don't think there's going to be a Marquette TBT team this year, so we won't be able to check in on that, which is actually fine. I'm good with actually cheering for the actual team as opposed to the alumni team in the summer.
Right.
I think that's a good trade. I did enjoy those guys in the summer in the past, but so this will probably be our last podcast for a while, but we will be back. You want to run it back, Phil? You want to keep doing this podcast for another year?
I guess we could do it for another decade.
Yeah, well, sure, why not? So we're going to keep it going, but again, you may not hear from us for a while. And again, but if there is news, significant news, whether it's transfers in, transfers out, any kind, other kind of movement that makes you say, whoa, that is significant to Marquette for next year, we'll check in and maybe have a quick chat about it. So, but in the meantime, you can keep up with us a few ways. Twitter's the best way. I am Joe McCann 3. Phil is MOOOF 23. At Crack Sidewalks is the team handle. There is cracksidewalks.com. We post podcasts there, and you can always leave comments there, and you can always rate, review, and subscribe Apple Podcasts and Spotify, and there is a Scrambled Eggs Facebook page as well. So, Phil, the end of another great season. Anything you want to touch on before we get out of here?
No, I enjoyed the enthusiasm and the excitement. I loved the journey with everyone, so thank everyone for that. And let's hope we get a month or two where that bat signal doesn't go up. Like, I love talking to you, Joe, but we can take a little bit of a break, and because that means there's no news, which is good news.
Yeah,
this season.
We can just like text and stuff. We can just tweet.
Right.
We don't
need
to do a podcast every week.
Yeah.
But let me say this though. Optimistic Phil has been a big thing, but if they bring everybody back, you ain't seen optimism like Optimistic Joe next year.
Looking at the wins and losses list, 30-0, no losses.
If they bring everyone back, you better get ready for some big time optimism, and mean big time optimism. All right, folks. Again, we appreciate all of you for listening to this podcast. If we didn't think people listened, we would have stopped this a long time ago. So we're going to keep it going, and we will continue to follow Marquette basketball, and we have enjoyed doing it. Thank you guys for being on this ride with us and checking in with us every week. Enjoy your off season, what hopefully will be a very boring one, as we get ready for what will hopefully be an awesome 2023-2024. Until we check in next time, everybody, seashells and balloons.